Welcome back, one and all, to episode 197 of the Original Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, our lives have gotten insanely busy, and we just have not had the time that we wanted to have this year. However, we had to make this one happen, right? This is what the fans want more than anything else.
Yeah, that's right, Seth. And as we've explained before on the show, we got real busy with work and family stuff. We're hoping to pick back up full time, but as I tweeted out earlier, we're recording on a Sunday, and I tweeted out earlier that, you know, that kind of turned Seth and I into part-time draftniks this year, which we already were, but now we're like part-time. But with that being said, we're going to get this show out. More on that in a sec. We'll try and do a mock draft as we have done the last few years. And I'll definitely post my rankings in some format or another on the Patreon site. I'll probably leave them open to the public right now because right now we're not charging. So we'll make it free for people this year. That way you can ridicule me instead of just being one of our patrons that can ridicule me regularly. So with that being said, Seth, the show that everyone's been waiting for, of course, we do it every year. It's the only show our friend does. He's gracious enough to do it with us exclusively, and it is the O-line special with our friend Sully Football. Sully, welcome to the show. Thank you for making time for us this year again.
What's up, boys? I heard y'all say, first off, it's allergy season here in Virginia, so if I sound a little off tonight, that's what's happening. But I heard you guys talking a little bit about being part-time, and man, world's kind of been a whirlwind for me here the past few months too, so I'm not as, I would say, as deep into the class as I typically am. You know, I've kind of watched more, instead of watching 8-9 games, you know, because usually I just lay in bed and sit there and, you know, watch them, but, you know, this year it's more kind of a lot more highlight-based and maybe, you know, 2-3 games of everyone, so not as deep as I've been in the past, just I've had quite a bit going on, just, you know, personally, family, and, you know, with all that good stuff. So again, just like you guys, maybe a little less this year than years past.
That's quite all right, because that is still ahead of where I am, of course. I probably did not watch 2 or 3 of all these guys, but we do have a lot to talk about, and I wanted to jump right in. So I've seen up to 10 O-line projected in the first round mocks. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah the other day said he's predicting 10 O-line go in the first round, and it does seem like a very stacked class on paper. And as said, as they say, it's stacked. Do you agree?
You know, this is a weird one. The class is getting, like, hyped as having all this depth, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, you're seeing people talk about plug-and-play starters at the end of round one, you know, early round two. And at that point, it's like OT 8 and 9, which, you know, historically would tell you those guys aren't going to be plug-and-play starters. But then on top of that, this class is interesting. You know, there's a lot of position changes. So there's a lot of offensive tackles that are going to slide in and play guard and center, like Graham Barton. And then there's all these guys who've played right tackle, and everyone's just, like, convinced that these guys are going to slide over and play left tackle with no problem. Some of them have played zero left tackle snaps at all. Some of them are, you know, 30 and 40 snaps. I think Tyler Guyton's got like 50 snaps 1 year, 34 snaps, something like that 1 year. There's all these guys with these big names that are projected to go 18, 17, 15, and they really haven't played a ton of football. So it's an odd class to me. You know, there's a lot of injury concern. The classes have gotten older, just kind of, you know, due to COVID and, you know, just a lot of the transfer portal and things like that that have kind of aged some of the way these classes come out now in NIL. There's a lot of, you know, things that affect that. But it really feels like a ton of position changes and a lot of guys with injury histories and a ton of question marks. So I don't think I'm as high on the class as everybody else is. I do think there's a few studs. You know, there's, you know, two studs at offensive tackle. I think there's a pretty good center. And then, you know, the offensive guards are somewhat weak this year, but really just overall value for them in the league is kind of weak as well. So I'm not sure that the guards are bad. They're just kind of being valued where they should be now.
Well, to your point, Sully, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but, like, when you're paying guys like Robert Hunt and these guys like $100 million, I'm like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And I know salary cap's going up, but it's like, really? Like, this is the highest paid guard ever? Like, what am I missing here?
And Seth, so, is that a signal from the league that it's actually not as, like, To me, I think I'm a little harsher on this class because, like, some of the factors that Sully said, it's an old class. You know, you got 24 and 25 year olds coming out. We'll come back to that point later. But, you know, I've kind of got guys that they're saying are first round guys. I've got them on day two or, you know, third round, somewhere in there. You know, so, they gave this all this money to these free agents. Is that a signal?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it probably has a lot more to do with the way defenses are playing. So mm-hmm. the league always yo-yos, right? They go back to what was working. So if people are going to, you know, not let you throw the ball deep all day anymore, then the box lightens up a little bit. Maybe we're going to get back into running the football some. Running backs seem to have kind of got right. paid again in this offseason. So that, great. Yeah, right. I mean, that might have a little more to do with it.
Running backs getting paid. Football Twitter is so mad.
Right. Yeah. Analytics Twitter couldn't believe it. Oh. So it may have a little more to do with that. But before I pay Robert Hunt $100 million or what Trey Smith's probably going to get next year, right? Like 100% let him walk and find somebody else to play that spot. I mean, you know, I was a notorious hater of that Joe Tooney contract, and he's a fantastic player. Like, we might be one more Super Bowl away from him having a Hall of Fame, you know, discussion, at mm-hmm. least, right? Just because of what he's going to have on paper. And even then, when we paid him that money, I was like, what are we doing? And he looks like a value at this point, right? Like, he's like, man, you're underpaying this guy. So I don't know. I think it probably has a little bit more to do with just the way that the, you know, the league kind of yo-yos back and forth between whether we want to play power football and run the ball, or, you know, whether we want to sit back there and throw it 50 times a game. I took a look at the top guys just to kind of hit on that position change thing. And from what I could tell, it's really, you know, of those kind of top 12 offensive tackles, it's Alt, Faltano, Olu, Morgan, the kid from BYU, Coleman, and then the big Houston kid, right? Like, those are the six or seven that have actually played left tackle. All of these other guys that you're seeing being mocked to your favorite team, right, at 18, 19, 20, that are, you know, you're being told are going to come in and solve your left tackle woes, have never played the position. Like, it's wild to me just how this is this big assumption that these guys are going to go from right tackle to left tackle with no problem.
Yeah, and that's something that you have talked to us about in the past on past shows. So I urge everybody to, if you haven't heard those shows, go back and listen to them, because we talked more about, you know, technique and what it takes, what scouts are looking for and things like that on those shows than we're going to hit on tonight. But you see, there's a lot of guys that also played guard at the start of their career and then moving out to tackle. I think a lot of those guys are going to go back into playing guard at the pro level. Not as much of a change as what you're talking about, but yeah, that's something we've touched on before. It's not easy to switch from the right side to the left side. I'm gonna ask you this next question, and I managed to get a player in here into this question that played for the Buckeyes and the Browns. So for those of you that play the original Draft Breakdown drinking game, you can go ahead and drink twice. We have a ton of like giant, massive OTs this year that are. Maybe not a ton, but they're projected high. There's like four of them. They're 6'7 plus and 320 plus, all projected to go day one, day two. I'm talking about Alt. I'm talking about Patrick Paul, who you just touched on, the Houston left tackle, Amarius Mims, and Tyler Guyton. So they're all, like I said, they're all projected day one, day two. Is DeJuan Jones' rookie success helping push these guys up the consensus boards? Because we've seen in the past that people are kind of lower on these giant, massive guys. They usually say they're right tackle only. You know, you don't want a 6'9" guy playing guard, generally speaking. Do you think DeJuan Jones' success as a rookie last year kind of is bolstering these guys' case?
Certainly could be. I think he was a different player than, you know, really these four massive guys that are in there this year, where, you know, I don't know that he was quite the athlete that you see with these four.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the question you're going to have with tall guys, or not just tall guys, right, but these massive guys, is can they stay healthy? You have major, major injury concerns with Guyton and Mims. Mims in particular, I mean, he's barely getting through workouts without getting hurt. I believe.
Yeah, Guyton's up at the combine.
Yeah. I mean, he can barely get through a workout. So, like, it's all projection for him, right? Like, at that point, you're looking at that and you're just saying, I can take this freak of nature and turn him into a really good offensive tackle, because there's nothing that he's shown you so far that says he's going to stay healthy or really be able to do it. Guyton kind of in the similar, you know, mold of that. And again, both guys who've played right tackle, who people are saying are just going to slide over to the left, you know, major injury concerns. They're massive guys that can't stay healthy. And then, you know, the question you have with Ault, which is an interesting one, right, is with him being 6'8", 34-inch arms are not short, but are they short for a guy that's 6'8", right? Because I think the only thing you can say about Ault that may be a problem is guys do seem to get in his chest a little bit. Not often. I think he's awesome, right? I think he's a, like, plug-and-play, forget-about-him type guy. But if you had one negative to say about him, maybe that's it. So I don't want to call him short. Like, you know, he's definitely – there's no length concerns there, but it's just, you know, when you start talking about 2 and 3 inches taller than everybody else and he has the same arms, you know, I think he may have short arms for his frame, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the thing about being that tall too, when he gets in his pass set, his the where he's going to set his arms is going to be higher than other guys that are a little, you know, 6'5". And so that allows these defensive linemen are almost all shorter than him. I mean – he's 6'8" plus, and so they're going to be they're automatically going to be underneath him right off the jump. But I agree with you. I love Joe Ault. I think he's one of the top players in this class. Seth, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, with to your point about a lot of these guys, why are these guys that haven't played a lot getting just kind of thrown into, like you said, the first round? And like, is it just all projection that they're hoping that these guys will end up being good? Because I mean, you start with Amarius Mims. I mean, we talked about obviously the soft tissue injuries that he's just dealt with every along the entire way. But I mean, this guy started 8 games ever. and he's literally being like talked about as a top 20 pick. And yeah, everything's super interesting, right? Like you said, almost 6'8", 340 pounds. Before he pulled up lame, his testing looked really impressive. But 8 games at right tackle, you know, his first career start came in the college football playoffs last year. So, like, this is a guy that didn't even start until until 2023, basically, when he was a – you know, a sophomore. So I just, it's such a weird situation between him. You know, you mentioned Guyton. He's had 15 starts in his career, played in 29 games, but only started 15. One of those starts came at tight end and H-back. You know, these guys like Kingsley, Suomaitai, who's the other one? Talisi Fuaga, like, they've only started 2 years, and don't get me wrong, they're ass kickers. I mean, they look just like mean sons of guns, but like, why are we propping up guys that haven't played that much?
Well, and Seth, real quick, also, Fatano is another guy who's only got basically 2 years as a starter, and he's going to be 24. So anyway.
So I would say that question was kind of two answers, right? So first, when it comes to these, when it comes to Mims and Guyton in particular, right, because that's kind of the ones we're talking about the most, the injuries bother me the most because that's why they haven't been on the field, right? It wasn't a talent thing. It wasn't like they, you know, I think Guyton did transfer, right, but it wasn't like they were moving a bunch of schools. You know, some of these other guys you're talking about that you just mentioned, it's the way NIL and the transfer portal have kind of impacted college football now. You know, these guys are transferring around 1-2 places, so they're maybe only a starter for a year or two before they're getting to the league. That you're seeing that a lot more. You know, we talked about the age with Fultanu. A lot of these guys are older with the COVID year, but I think the NIL, you know, because they can make money now staying in, so why come out and be a fifth-round pick, right, when you can stay in school and make some money? So I think that's having an impact on things age-wise and also why some of the guys don't have as many starts as like we've seen in the past. But when it comes to some of these guys in particular this year, right? Amarius Mims, Guyton, there's a few more, Jordan Morgan. Now, he's played a lot of football, but still, these guys have massive injuries, or like in the cases of Mims and Guyton, it's guys that are just gigantic that can't stay healthy. So I think, you know, like a guy like Jordan Morgan has some injury history there, but it's kind of a one-off thing, right? He's not been injured a ton, at least to my knowledge. You know, so for him, it's more of like, you know, is there any type of recurrence, you know, when it comes to like an ACL? I believe he tore his ACL last year, versus these other guys, like you mentioned, Mims, who can't get through workouts because he's just so big. It's, you know, a body that big isn't meant to move around like that. So, you know, I really, again, like when you're talking about the number of starts, you just kind of outline Mims' entire career. On top of all that, right, they're expecting this guy to not only stay healthy, he's not played any football, he's also going to go from right tackle to left tackle with no problem if you're reading – you know, Draft Twitter or anybody on X. So I think it's fallen in love with the project there. Now, he's a little bit more, you know, kind of freaky than a Guyton is. Guyton's a very good athlete as well, but Mims kind of is like a Build-A-Bear, right? You know, he's a, you know, created player. So maybe, you know, maybe that's why you're, you know, you're saying, hey, I can, if I'm someone who has kind of an embarrassment of riches, right, I have a ton of picks in the first 2 days, maybe I can throw a dart there, hope that hits, and I don't need him to play right away. Maybe something along those lines. But I would not touch him, you know, anywhere in the first round. I'm really – he's – you know, we're going to get to it later on too, but he's probably my guy I'm the most down on compared to everybody else.
Shout out to Build-A-Bear. If they want to sponsor our show, please contact us. The original draft – or the Draft Breakdown Podcast at gmail.com. But you touched on the age, and we've talked about that a couple times, and I want to know how much that really concerns you, because we have so many 24 and 25-year-olds this year, and it's been happening the last couple of years because of the COVID situation, and it's probably going to start calming down now, as this was the last year that they got that extra COVID year. But you know, 24, 25-year-old guys coming out, they look good playing college football, right? But I get kind of that, like, the junior in high school playing on the JV team kind of vibe. It bothers me. You know, I don't want to draft. If I'm drafting, I only have a limited number of picks. There's plenty of 21 through 23-year-olds to pick from. It's always bothered me to see these older guys playing against 18-year-olds. And you just wonder how much – to me, it's the question is how much development is left. And I know normal people are still developing as humans at 24 years old. But how much – you know, they played a lot of snaps, and they weren't – great enough to make the leap earlier. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on where you're taking him. So, like Fultanu, right? If you're going to draft him in the first round, and you know, the first round you get that extra year, so you're basically keeping control of him until he's 29. That's probably not a second contract guy, right? Unless he's a stud. Versus, you know, if you can take, you know, Kingsley or, you know, all, I mean, obviously Alton Olu, you take no matter what. But some of those guys there.
Blake Fisher's another young guy that's in there.
Super young, yep. Right? So, like, if you get some of those guys, you're talking about, right, you know, second rounder for Fisher, second, third round. But, I mean, mm-hmm. Some of those first round guys, maybe Kingsley goes at the end of the first round, like KC. I mean, you're talking about 26 years old before you're ready to have to pay him again. I mean, that's 2 years away for some of those guys you just mentioned.
Right.
So I think it really depends on where you're drafting them and really who you are as a team. So, like, if you're Kansas City, you know, right in the middle of trying to go for a three-peat, and, of course, I was going to make sure I mentioned that, right, while we were recording.
That's another drinking game.
So, you know, just right in the middle of the new dynasty, right, like – maybe he makes a ton of sense because he's plug and play and there isn't a ton of development needed with him. You know, some of the older guys, but I'm with you, man. I think it depends on what round you're drafting them and kind of what your plans are. The second contract isn't as common as people think, but some of these guys are 23 and 24 years old, aren't really ready to play. So you're talking about putting them on the bench for a year, hoping they get healthy, you know, whatever. And now they're 25 and they're just now starting, and you only have 3 more years of contract control on them before you're going to be expected to pay them. So I agree with you. I think that's kind of the new norm, though. Brett Veach talked about that in his most recent press conference, or one of his most recent press conferences, where he thought NIL was having a huge impact on the age overall just of the draft classes now. And he talked a lot about, like, those mid-round guys now, and when it came to the skill positions, corner and wide receiver, they're 23, they're 24. So you start factoring that in, right, especially at those positions, just the age factor of it all. So O-line, not as much. But in the first round for me, you know, like I said, that's a massive difference that you do got to kind of take into account there. A guy like Kingsley, again, you're paying him his second deal when he's 26 versus, you know, some of these other guys like Fultanu, you're talking 29, he's almost 30 before you're ready to pay him that second contract if you do. So,
yeah, I gotta do some research on this too, because we've seen a lot of first and second round guys now getting cut or traded after a year or two, where that almost never used to happen. I gotta look at this because I'm wondering, you know, the first name that popped in my head as we're talking about age was Damon Arnett. He was a corner out of Ohio State. Came out as a 24-year-old, and the Raiders, I know he had the off the field issues. He was acting, you know, he was acting goofy on social media with the guns and everything. But I mean, it'd be so much easier as a team to move on from a guy who's already 25, 26, and he's, like, you know, not panning out, than a guy who's still young and you think he has promise. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Seth.
No, I was going to say, because it was the same conversation that somebody was having with me about Braden Fisk, right? Like, where do you take Braden Fisk? And I was like, from a talent standpoint, maybe you can make a reasoning to draft him in round two. But like Sully said, you're basically saying, like, I'm going to get this guy during his prime. Like, that's the best football he's going to play. And his second contract's going to be at 29. And you just can't, like, I know you want to look forward, but like Sully said, like, if you're the Chiefs, you can do that because you're in a window and it doesn't matter. But if you're the Cardinals, you can't take a guy that you may not be part of your future because that's what you're building towards. So I think it's specific to the teams, and you know, different teams can do different things with that. But at the same time, man, it's this new situation that we have here, and we'll see how it unfolds over the course of the next couple of years, right? As things start to balance back out.
And talk about short arms. I mean, Fisky. Which one is it?
I have no idea.
I honestly
don't know.
we like to pronounce every which way so that we cover it one way or another. But real short arms. He's going to be 24. I know we're not trying to.
He's going to be 25.
He's going to. Okay, so.
Yeah.
And. I get Anthony Zettel vibes from him, but that's a conversation for a different show. Back on track with the O-line, though, a guy I've been seeing a lot of talk about, and this really can't – it happened at the combine. He had an incredible combine, and he's a young guy. He's going to be 22 years old in June, as far as I can tell. Roger Rosengarten from Washington, you know, national champion, runners-up. Fantastic combine. I'm starting to see him get connected to the 49ers at the end of the first round. To me, that's wild. Like, he was never a player I thought would get into the first round, even after a great combine. I wanted to get Sully's take on Rosengarten, because he, obviously high-profile program, but another guy, even a younger guy, but really only 2 years as a starter. I think he played right tackle, correct?
Yeah, he was their right tackle, and I'm so glad you guys asked this question. So this feels very, very much like – because remember, he was on nobody's radar until Lynch stayed after to do the workout with him or whatever when they were up there. Or they flew the private jet and the whole nine, right? It hit Twitter that the Niners were, like, paying extra attention to him. Then all of a sudden he starts getting connected to the 49ers, and then boom, he's a first-rounder, right? It's insane to me. This feels very much like – let me pretend that I was high on this guy all along in case they take him at the end of the first round and he's going to get plugged into the 49ers fake offense and probably be decent. And I can pretend, right,
well,
that
from,
I was...
Well, from one fake offense to another, because you have the Washingtons.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Now, he fits what the 49ers do, but when we're talking about a first rounder and these other people, now you're starting to see these other fan bases pick up. Like, well, maybe, you know, we're looking at him at 18 or 20 or 22. Like, barely scraped over 6'5". Right, was I think he was like 305 at the combine, maybe, or 305 at his workout. So how much weight did he put on to even get to that weight? 20 reps on the bench, which sounds like a lot. It's not for an offensive lineman, and under 34-inch arms. Like, everything about the guy screams guard, you know. But he had a pretty good – I think he was at – what bowl was he at? Senior Bowl? He was at one of the All-Star games he was at, where, you know, everybody was tweeting the clips. It looked like he was having a good week there. And then you hear the news of them doing that extra workout with him, and then all of a sudden, this guy's a first-rounder, right? So I don't see it. I think he's a really good value in, like, the third round. Could be a guy who maybe, like, a Jeff Allen from Kansas. I know I do a lot of comps with that, right? But provides that Jeff Allen value like Kansas City got for a few years out of him, where – could plug and play at either guard spot. You were comfortable with him getting you by a little bit at left tackle, but, you know, he could also play some right tackle. I like him more in that kind of a role, but, you know, if you're going to go play for the 49ers, it's just, you know, in what they do, he fits perfect. But I don't believe he's a first-rounder unless he's at, like, you know, San Francisco. Really, beyond them, I don't think he goes until, like, round three. I think this is definitely group think taking over. And it would be hilarious to me if the 49ers went and did all that work, you know, extra work and all, just to take him in the third round. We can watch everybody kind of have egg on their face here and the end of next week, because it's I don't see it on film. His workout, you know, he had a really good workout, but again, you're supposed to work out well if you're smaller than everybody, right? Like, you know, it's – kind of a trade-off. So, again, there's nothing really elite about his frame or size or anything along those lines. So I don't see it at all here. He was definitely not the better of the two.
I'm glad you said third round, because that's actually the grade I have on him, is a third, fourth round pick. You know, that late day two, early day three window. You're talking about in the 80s and on low hundreds in that range. That's where I saw him. So the first round stuff was just, I was not connecting with that. It just doesn't make sense.
And I want to make sure that I say, I don't want it to come off like I don't like the player, but I think first round's insane.
Mm-hmm. No, right? He's like a good player, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially given value, like, especially given what else is there. Like, I think he can start. You know, I'm not saying he can't play right tackle. I definitely don't think he's a left tackle. I don't think he can play. I think he can play right tackle. I think he's probably better off suited at guard in most offenses, especially given his size. But he's a fantastic athlete. But, you know, again, just, you know, you're talking about a guy who might play at, what, 6'5", 290, you know, shorter arms. And on top of the shorter arms and the smaller size, he's also not a very strong – I mean, bench press isn't a great indicator of, like, your overall strength, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, it does show you who's a weight room guy and who's not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, like, I always say that, right? Like, going into a weight room, bench pressing 225 is, you know, that's not a great indicator of how strong some of these guys are. But
is that a tip-off to you that he's going to need more time in an NFL strength and training program before he really sees the field?
It could be, but then again, you're developing – it's not like you're developing this elite frame or anything. And then if you're putting on weight, how much does – you know, my worry, every time you start to talk about the guys who are a little lighter too, right, is you start to put on – stuff start to add to the frame, right? Do they lose some of the explosion that makes them what they are?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, again, I don't know. Maybe it sounds crazy to other people when you're talking about light kicking them inside. I just thought that's what I saw.
Yeah, not everyone's Joe Thomas. You can just get drafted and drop down into basically play in the 270s and still be at an elite level with, you know, just his technique was so good.
I'm trying to think. I mean, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, now he played super light. He probably played like 270, 275, but you were talking about a guy with like, you know, insane arm length, you know, elite athlete. So it's been done, but I don't know, man. I was glad you guys asked this one because, I don't want to come off like I don't like the player, but this is my guy this year that's like, this guy's being groupthink. You know, this is it this year. Everybody just all of a sudden had a first-round grade on Rosengarten as soon as they found out the 49ers liked him at whatever they're picking.
And that's why Seth and I always talk about value too. Like, you look at some comps, right? Right for Rosengarten, and a couple that come out with, if you look up mockdraftable.com, you get a Guy Wimper. You guys remember him? He played for the Jags, and then you get DJ Humphreys. So Seth, if you had it to do over again, say that's the best case for Rosengarten. Is that worth a first rounder?
It took 3 years before he turned in anything. So that's the whole thing, and I've seen some comps to like guys like Anton Harrison coming out last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
he played well, right?
I think he was okay. I mean, I don't follow enough Jags football to be overly.
Sully, you're a big Jags fan. Did he play?
He had a good year. He got Chris Jones kind of crushed him early on, but that happens to everybody.
Yeah, that's an awakening.
Yeah, and then I believe he kind of settled in pretty well.
But I mean, that's the thing is, you guys were mentioning, you know, Rosengarten and. The funny thing is with like teams like the 49ers, they haven't exactly drafted offensive linemen well. Like that's what always makes me laugh is everybody's like, oh yeah, the Niners are on them, and then you go back and you look at their drafts, and you know Colton McKivitz was one of their draft picks, and now they're just trying to replace him, right? Like Spencer Buford, you know, these guys that
are they're drafting the wrong guys, right?
I think they got Aaron Banks right. He's been pretty good, right? But
yeah.
We were also kind of surprised at where he went, too, right?
Yeah, they took him in the second round.
In the second round, yeah. and then he didn't play for 2 years, and you're like, oh, okay. So, I mean, you know, that's the big thing you look at is just how these – I think people get overly impressed because they're like, oh, the 49ers. Like Sully said, like, oh, well, they're just going to turn him into this Pro Bowler. It's like – their best lineman, they stole from Washington for basically nothing because Washington's the worst-run franchise in the NFL, and that's coming from a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, or they were the worst-run franchise in the NFL at that point. And so, I mean, Trent Williams wasn't a 49er development. He's just been an ass kicker his entire life and was just stuck in that hellhole, right? And so, I don't know. It's just an interesting thing. Sully, when you look at this class in general, and I think you've already hit on it, but are you going with Mims as the most overrated guy in this class?
No, so I want to give you two different names here, because I knew I was probably going to crush Mims long before we got to this point. So so that way we don't keep talking about the same guy here, because again, Mims might land in the right spot, stay healthy, and I look like a dummy in a few years here, right? But I'm going to go the center from Oregon, JPJ. Not that I don't like the player, but where you see him being mocked, you understand he's got to be the best center of all time for that to, like, there's no value. Like, I'm talking, I've seen him top 12, top 15, and I'm looking at the guy and going, I mean, he's a pretty good player, but oh my God, like, what are we doing here?
Sully, he's a 1 year starter. I mean, yeah. He's one of the guys
it's unbelievable.
Even talked about. Like, I've never seen anything like it. Like, this dude started 17 games in his career, and one of them was at defensive tackle. Like,
he's got the best recovery, right, of all the interior linemen this year. But man, I mean, I'm just talking from a value standpoint of why I think he's overrated. Is like, if you're talking about taking this guy at 14, 15, 16, he legitimately has to be a Hall of Famer for that pick to kind of work out. That's insane value for that position, really, in the NFL. And then the last name I'm going to talk about here. What has everyone seen with J.C. Latham that has them thinking this guy's top 20?
Dude, I am.
He's lazy. He looks like an offensive guard. He watches more plays than he actually plays. I mean, he flashes a little bit, but most Alabama linemen do, right? I mean, he flashes a little every game, but for most of the game, he's kind of standing around. I just don't see it. He looks heavy. He doesn't look like he's – I mean, I'm sure he may test well, but he doesn't look like he moves particularly well. I just am all the way out on J.C. Latham. He's another guy everybody's just kind of, you know, pretending just going to, you know, switch sides like it's no big deal. He can play all these other positions. Rob Ortiz, who's kind of, you know, known in draft Twitter, right? He coached offensive line for a long time, coached in college. He said this when when Bama was playing this year. He said Alabama has – 5 offensive guards playing, and it shows. And that's what it looked like. You know, every time you're watching him, you're going, people are looking at this guy and saying he's going to go top 20 and play left tackle. Like, in what game, what film did he show you that he had that kind of potential at all? To me, he screams bust, like, big time, big time. I'm talking about, you're talking a year or two, he's not even in the league kind of bad. If you watch him, he kind of just leans on people a ton. And because they're Alabama, it works, right? But then once they got to some of the, you know, better game, bigger competition towards the end of the year, he really struggled. So I'm all the way out on J.C. Latham. Again, not to keep crushing Mims, because there's a chance that I look dumb on that one. And JPJ, please don't take that the wrong way. I like the player, but top 15, this guy's got to be putting the gold jacket on in 15 years, right? And then J.C. Latham, I have no idea what everybody's seeing. I've tried. Like, I've watched a ton, but I still don't get it. I have no idea what everybody's seeing there.
You think he's a guard, right?
I do. I mean, there's no way he plays tackle.
Okay. So he'd be a huge guard at 6'6", with the 35-inch arms. I mean, I think that's what people see on him, is he looks the part, right? 6'6", 340, 35-inch arms, giant hands. He was a really good tester coming out of high school. I don't think he tested. He didn't do the combine or pro day. No. So that kind of indicates that somebody's going to draft him really high. But you do have recent track record, you know, Neal coming out a couple of years ago, and then, you know, Fluker is another one that comes to mind. You don't always get great value out of these Bama offensive linemen. Seth and I have talked about for many years, there's a Bama tax, there's an SEC tax. So you're getting double taxed on the player that you take from Bama. He better be good, or you're going to end up taking him way too high. I want to go back real quick to JPJ, Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. He came in at the combine, and he tested really well at the combine. five seconds flat in the 40. He was 3:28, and I don't think he did agility testing at the combine or his pro day. Is that too heavy for a center? Is he going to be able to, you know, get out in space and pull and the types of things? Maybe it depends on what team he lands with.
Yeah, I mean, he actually does all that pretty well.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be too worried about that. And I'm never too worried. Like, it's not like he's 360, right?
Right.
You're talking 328, the right meal plan, and, you know, an NFL weight room, off-season training program, he can probably play at 315 rather easily, and that's not a problem. Yeah. Especially if we don't see it on film where it's kind of hindering him at all. He moves really, really well, especially for a guy that size. I did think he looked – I did, you know, when you watch him, I thought he looked kind of dumpy on film. You know, like he just looked super thick and heavy, especially in the midsection and all. So maybe that's something that somebody will clean up. But it's not like it's hurting him at all, you know, and what he does on the field. So I wouldn't be too worried about that.
I think that's a really good point too. At 328, and he is 6'3", so that is pretty heavy for, but I think 360 plus, and Seth and I have talked about that. We used to say 330, but now we got 330-pound guys looking like Adonises, but 360 guys usually look like they need to lose a lot of weight. 350, 360, you're getting into the danger zone.
Soli was all about that during the combine when everybody was gushing over Tavondre Sweat's
right.
9-second 40.
Yeah. Oh, that was the worst, wasn't it? Like, they're like, look how impressive this is. I'm like, I'm waiting for the impressive clip here. Like,
yeah.
You don't draft outliers early, man. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, you just don't do it.
And Seth and I talk about that all the time. Like, Antonio Brown in the fifth round is great scouting. But you're not taking a 5'10", 180-some-pound yeah. receiver that runs a 4.58 in the first round trying to find Antonio Brown. You don't do that. You try and find Antonio Browns in the fifth round. So, okay, let's go with underrated. Who's the most – give us one or two or three names, whatever you got for us. Who's underrated right now among the O-line?
Good. So I had three guys that are going to go later in the draft, and I got one from each position for you here. So
okay.
Javon Foster, he played left tackle for Mizzou.
Wow, you took a Mizzou guy?
Yeah, so I hate him. But, you know, I actually thought he was going to test better than he did because he moves pretty well on film. He's nasty. He's really good in the run game, really good in the pass game. I think he's going to be like a decent swing tackle. Again, when you're talking about these guys, you know, round four, round five, round six – guys that you draft and you can kind of forget about your backup offensive tackle spot, that's really valuable down in those rounds. With a guy who I think can be developed into a starter in Javon Foster. To me, really, really good player. At guard, Zach Zenter, he's my guy this year.
I pray he's healthy.
Yeah, I pray he's healthy. Zenter, he is, I mean, a badass through and through badass. I mean... ass kicker in the run game, fantastic in pass pro. Teammates loved him, right? Like, stand up guy, he's gonna be a locker room guy. Like, to me, if the leg's okay, that's forget about guard for 10 years with him. I think if he was healthy, he'd be being mocked like way higher than he is. He's also my pick to maybe go higher than most people think. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe the medicals are off of there. I don't know. I don't, you know, not privy to that information. But if you're going off of the football player, that guy's it. I mean, he's it. I love Zach Zenter this year. And
he's a 4-year starter too, 4+ years
at Michigan, right? Like, it's not like he played it. Yeah, he didn't play. You know, I don't know, Maryland, right? This guy played at Michigan, 4-year starter. Teammates loved him. If he's still there, floating around in the mid rounds, Harbaugh's going to snatch him up, right? Like,
yeah,
no way that guy's floating around.
I'm thinking third, fourth round for him, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's probably really good value. Just, you know, that's, and again, I think he would have been high too had he not been injured, but again, on film, dude, he's awesome. And then my last guy here, okay, I don't know what else this guy needs to do. His testing was off the charts, right? He checks every box, testing, size, everything you would need. His film is fantastic. I mean, it's to me probably the second best center film in the class, and that's Tanner Bordellini. I have no idea why nobody likes him. I can't really figure out the bad film. I think he's fantastic in pass pro, especially in today's NFL. Like, for what we ask the centers to do, he does really well in space in the run game. I think he's got maybe the best pass block. He's maybe the best pass blocking center in the class. If not, he's second to JPJ. I really, really, really like that guy. I think someone's going to get a steal. Like, we talk about value for JPJ at 15, 18, or, you know, first round, top 20. I hang around and take Bordellini in like round four, and I'm feeling pretty good there. So, he's my pick for, you know, maybe the most underrated player in the class this year from all, you know, for counting tackles, guards, or centers. Again, I don't have any idea what more he would need to do. A couple years ago, right, when we were doing the same pod, I kept talking about Trey Smith, and I kept saying, somebody show me the bad film, right? Like, why we don't like the guy. I understand why the NFL didn't like him because we had the medical questions, but draft Twitter didn't really like him either at first. And it was kind of like, hey, man, this guy's checking every box here, right? He's got the size, he's got the workouts, and he doesn't have bad film. He gets guys blocked. Bordolini, to me, same way. I really, really like him. I think he's going to have a ton of value, especially with where he's being mocked. I mean, I think PFF has him like down in like the seventh round. That's insane to me.
Yeah, and I've got him fourth, fifth round. And, you know, I'm wondering, I think the critique of him, well, first of all, I think a lot of people didn't see a lot of Wisconsin. And then he really surprised a lot of people at the combine. So people had to kind of scramble back to that. But, you know, only a two-year starter. And I think he's been around for a while. I don't know how old he is. He's one of the few guys I don't have a birth date on him.
He's not even 22 yet.
Oh, okay. Well, send me that birth date.
Just so you guys, so when you see his RAS, right, mm-hmm. they ran him as a guard. But if you move him over as a center, he's a 9.98.
Yeah. Well, so you're talking about one of the best, most athletic centers ever.
Like, legit. One of the most, like, in terms of his speed, his elite, his explosion is elite, his agility is elite. Like, he checks every single box. The only thing he didn't have, right, I think he was like 21, 22, 23 bench reps, something along those lines.
Yeah, so 21.
He's going to be playing on the interior. That can worry you some, but it doesn't show up on film. Like, his hands, he's got clamps, man. I mean, when he gets his hands on you, it's over. I'm telling you, that dude's got a ton of value, especially with where he's being mocked.
So I think there's a couple things on Bordolini. First, his bench was actually cut short at the combine because he hit the rack, and so he did it again at the pro day and put up 27. So
okay.
Again,
good nugget, Seth.
But then I think the biggest thing for him is he's been asked to play everywhere on the line over 4 years at Wisconsin. As his redshirt year in 2020, he had to start a game at center because of injuries. Then in 2021, he started 5 games, 3 at right tackle, 1 at left guard, 1 at tight end. Then in 22, he started 7 games at left guard and 3 games at right guard. So he had, this year is his only year of center film. Like, that's all he, this is the only time he's ever played center outside of one game in 2020 as a freshman. So I think people are just not, they look at the film and they go, well, he's not, you know, as smooth as a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, right? Or Zach Frazier. But ironically, the number one center in this class hasn't played center in 3 years, right? Like, Graham Barton hasn't even snapped the ball since he was a freshman. And you know, he's getting mocked in the first round as a center. And so it's like, so why does he get a pass when he hasn't done it since 2020? And Bordolini's just done it, you know, for 1 year and was really good at it. And then, like you said, like, you're talking elite measurables in terms of testing numbers. Those are like up near like the best of all time. And we're just kind of shrugging our shoulders at it. Cause I don't know. Are we thinking that some of it is cause these guys from Wisconsin don't always turn out the way people hope they would?
I don't know, man. I feel like the Wisconsin guys generally do a pretty good job in the pros coming off from that O-line. I think when you're talking about Bordolini versus Barton, I think Barton has, like you said, he hasn't played center for a while. So I think there's a lot of teams that are looking at him as a guard. And he's 6'5". So maybe there's some teams. I mean, I know his arms would be short, but he's a very athletic guy. Maybe there's even some teams thinking about trying him at tackle, but with Bordolini, he's got the really, really short arms that kind of pigeonholes you at center in the pros. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's it. And when you're talking about center only, you don't have that position versatility to give you that extra, you know, draft status.
Yeah, I'm completely sold, all in. And I mean, Seth, I think you just made an even better case for the value you can get him around 4 or 5. Like, he definitely can play all the interior positions. He's going to have shorter arms for the guard spots, right? But still, I mean, I don't think you're too worried about him getting you by there for a few games. And then again, I think just in terms of the explosion you see on the field, and again, the way he pass blocks as a center, I love it. I'm telling you, especially in today's NFL, if he goes to the right place, he's got a chance in round four, round five to start pretty early on in his career, and a guy we talk about a couple years from now, like, oh, yeah. You know, remember when they took JPJ at 15 and then, you know, round four, someone got Bortolini and got the better player? Like, I think that's very possible.
And you're talking about Zinter, you're talking about Bortolini. I appreciate the Big Ten love because I'm in Big Ten country and I see a lot of those guys play for a long time. And I think you generally do get pretty good offensive linemen out of the Big Ten. You're talking about Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State. Like, those are schools that produce pretty good linemen year in and year out. So you kind of touched on this. You mentioned Trey Smith. Another one of your guys over the last few years was Tyler Smith. That ended, he was a surprise first rounder, right?
Yeah. So, and I mean, having one hell of a career.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, he's been a very, very good player.
So you've picked out some really good gems for us over the years. And that's just, those are just two that I'm naming. There's been others that were deeper. Who is that guy this year? Who's your Tyler Smith or Trey Smith?
I think it's hard to say that about Zach Zinter because I think his is solely based on medical, right? Like, it's not anything about the player that's kind of has him so far down people's boards. It's really just the medicals there. So I didn't want to do that. Without not having as much time this year, you know, I'm not as deep into the classes, so I did just want to talk about a guy that I like more than everybody else and a guy I think has a chance to get drafted in those later rounds and find his way onto the field, and that's Delmar Glaze out of Maryland. He didn't test particularly well. You know, I'm not too worried about all that. If you watch him play, and I mean, even if you can even simply go just type his name into X and go, you know, click on the video section and just watch his reps and his one-on-ones at, you know, whatever bowl game he's in. There's so many of them now, I don't really pay attention. But, you know, especially if you watch him play football, he's played a lot of snaps, and he's as patient in his pass set, I think, as anyone in the class, right? So Olu, for sure, is the best pass blocker at offensive tackle. I don't think Glaze is on that level, but just the patience that he plays with, I mean, it reminds you of almost like a Ronnie Staley, you know, people who just kind of sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. He really makes a defender pick, you know, what direction he's going, what move he's using, and then he reacts to that. I really, really think Delmar Glaze, and he can play inside as well. So I think Delmar Glaze has a chance to be a guy who goes like round five, round six, and last in the league for quite a while. I've also heard from some people that there's maybe a chance he's going a little bit higher than that. Like, the league might be higher on him than, you know, kind of what the big draft is. So he's my guy this year. Not like my guy is Zinter this year. Let me make that clear. But Delmar Glaze is a guy kind of in, you know, the Quentin Spain mold of a dude who played, you know, tack on college, could kick inside in the NFL, but has all the traits of a starter. Again, didn't test particularly well, but he gets guys blocked, and that's very, very important. He gets guys blocked. He's played football. He knows what he's doing. I think if he ends up in the right situation, he's got a real chance to get on the field a whole lot quicker than some of these guys that are going, you know, earlier in the draft. And then the last thing I'll say is, if I'm going to take one of these projects, you know, we're talking about your guys. If I'm going to take one of these projects, I think I can fix Patrick Paul's base, right? I think I can fix his base and the leverage that he plays with a whole lot easier than I can keep Mims or one of them other guys healthy. So when we're talking about my guys this year, I think I like Patrick Paul a little bit more than everybody else. And then the later round guy for me would be Delmar Glaze. I think he's going to play some football in the NFL for a while.
Man, I'm so glad. I feel so much better about my rankings now, having talked to you, because I like Patrick Paul quite a bit too. I have a second or third round grade on him. I know lately I've seen some people really poo-pooing him. Sticking with Maryland real quick, I just want to get your take. Do you have a take on their other tackle, Gottlieb Adeyemi? And no. I'm sure I messed that name up.
Yeah, no. I'm kind of locked in on this Delmar Glaze. So he caught my eye. God, I don't remember who it was now that was tweeting the clips of the one-on-ones. I think he was at the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was at whatever. What's the other bowl? I don't know the other
Shrine.
One.
Shrine Bowl.
The Shrine Bowl. He was at one of those two bowls. And somebody was tweeting the clips, which then made you go back and kind of watch some Maryland film, which, surprisingly enough, I don't know how they weren't better, by the way. They're littered with prospects all over the place.
They always have great prospects.
It's wild. They might be like the next step down from, like, me and my friends talk about this all the time. Penn State has eight guys get drafted in the first two rounds every year, and they never win anything that matters.
Because they lose to Ohio State, Michigan. Every year.
And then like Maryland, you look at Maryland, you're like, oh, they're going to have like nine guys drafted off a team that wins four games. So they're pretty wild. But Delmar Glaze, he's a guy I'm telling you, I'm pretty high on him.
More Big Ten love. We got to do this. We do this every year. Usually Seth and I give you our top five, but we don't want to take up too much time. So my rankings will be posted on the Patreon for everybody to see later this week. But who are your top five O-line?
So everybody really cares about the tackles, so I kind of kept it to the tackles.
Okay.
Olu and Alt are kind of 1-2 for everybody. I think Olu's being slept on. And, you know, I was actually texting with some O-line guys right before we got on this pod today. Like, I don't know what everybody's seeing with Olu that all of a sudden has him dropping.
Small hands, right?
That is the most pure, smooth pass set that you've seen in a long time. Like, I have no idea how that guy, unless if he stays healthy, there's no chance he's not good. And I think the thing is, people are in love with people movers in the run game, right? Like, and he's not really that, but it's not like he's a bad run blocker. He's just not really moving guys around a ton. He's more getting in the way. He's getting guys blocked. I threw this comp out there a little bit, and it's not a great one because Ekwonu was, you know, I was actually told, no, that's a bad comp. But for me, just watching him, I don't know why I kept seeing Ikem Ekwonu. Not in the run game, but just in the pass game. They just look like they're built similar. I would love to see what the comp is for them on, like, a mock draftable, just to see how those webs compare. But Olu, to me, he's O-line one. Joe Alt, again, I don't think you have any problems with Alt at all. If there's any questions about him, it's just, is he kind of short for his height? But again, it doesn't show up on film,
right,
so I wouldn't be too worried about
right?
that. Yeah, yeah.
Just to be clear. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I wouldn't be too worried about that. I have Faltano at 3. Fuaga, I believe, is how you're going to pronounce that, mm-hmm. at 4. And then I like the BYU kid at 5. He's played some football. He's an ass kicker. He's got a ton to work with. I really think he's the fifth offensive tackle, way over some of these other guys. I would take him long before I would hope that Mim stays healthy or Guyton's going to stay healthy or, you know, Jordan Morgan, who tested like a guard, right, was basically the size of a guard, already has a major lower body injury. Now I'm seeing him go in the teens over some of these other guys that have just played more football and been better football players and also are younger. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. So that's my top five.
So you've got Kingsley in your top five.
I do.
Again, I'm feeling better. I have him in my top five as well. And only 21 years old.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think there's a ton to work with there. And again, like, you don't have all those question marks. You know what I'm saying? That when you talk about these other people, his explosiveness and the way he blocks in the run game, that explosion and that's there. You don't see that with some of these other guys. It's all a projection based off of how they tested. He's got the film that backs it up. Not only did he not test well, right? Like, he checked all those boxes too. But then he's got the film that backs all that up. I'm telling you, I really like him. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good player. Again, but you're talking about OT5, right? So, mm-hmm. like, my biggest worry with a guy like that is he's going to be, you know, is he going to go a place that he's expected to start day one? And maybe he doesn't have a great start. Who was the kid that the Giants took? Now, they took him early a couple
Andrew
years
Thomas.
Ago. Andrew Thomas, yeah. Right, where he struggled for a year or two before he kind of got his feet under him. You may see something like that with Kingsley just based off of where he's, you know, if he ends up at Kansas City at 32, he's probably going to go in and beat Wanya Morris, you know, for that left tackle job. And then he's going to, you know, it's baptism by fire, right? He's going to be in there playing snaps when he's not totally ready just yet. But I think if you have some patience with him, he's a guy. And at 21 years old, like we talked about earlier, second contracts at age 26, I'm big on that.
Seth, do you have a hot take for us?
I don't have.
If you got to look for one, I've got one. Okay, we can start with this one because I'm going to take us away from O-line for this because Josh Norris from Underdog, which is one of my favorite sports betting apps for player bets. Again, not a sponsor, but if they want to, please contact us. But Josh Norris, he tweeted out a clip, this was maybe about a week and a half ago, of Brock Bowers, or I don't even know if he tweeted a clip, but he basically just made the point that Brock Bowers didn't test. So we don't have clear proof that he is an elite athlete. And we all know that Brock Bowers is constantly being mocked in the top 10, top 15, right? So I think that's a valid point. You know, Josh is just saying he's not saying he's bad or that he wouldn't take him that high. He's only saying we just don't have concrete proof that he's this elite athlete. And Seth and I have talked about Bowers and the value of drafting a tight end that early. We were seeing him in the top five in during the season, mocked in the top five. Since then, now we've seen him drop back a little bit, but we're still seeing possibly top 10, top 15. And Josh has just been getting roasted by fantasy football Twitter because of this take, and they're showing clips of Bowers that they claim to prove that he's elite as an athlete. I think somebody said he did get clocked at 20, 21 miles per hour at some point on the GPS. Let me get your take, Sully. Is Bowers hype legit? Like, should he go in the top 15?
All right, so I think I was kind of following along that same thread, and someone made the point. Which one of these tight ends that have gone super high, like just in recent memory, has been worth that pick?
Right.
So I'm just thinking just in most recent, right?
SEC, yeah, like TJ Hockenson's already been traded once. Noah Fant's been traded.
You know, last year Dalton Kincaid was supposed to set the world on fire. He was fine, but it wasn't like he was, you know, awesome. Kyle Pitts was supposed to be the second coming of, you know, the greatest tight ends we've ever seen. He's really been an average player.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can contribute that to a lot of things, but it's not like he's really done a whole lot.
And I mean, Sam LaPorta outplayed Kincaid last year.
Right.
As a day two guy.
So, and you're talking, he's definitely small. We know that, right?
Right.
Like, there's no question.
He played
at
230, right? I mean, yeah. He's weighing in at 240 and then not running. So
there's a reason for that. So basically, I think what you're planning on drafting a guy who's small, who you didn't get any testing on, to play a position that typically when it's drafted that high hasn't really led to a ton of impact. So I don't know, man. I think people fall in love with like the idea of Travis Kelce, you know, those types, but these aren't even close to the same player. Travis Kelce's 6'5", 260. You know, and you're talking about a guy here who maybe is, what, 6'3", 235? Right? Is that where we're thinking he comes in at? We have no testing on him. Now, he might have some game speed stuff, but we have no testing on him. We have no nothing. I would not take him that high. I saw someone recently mock that the Chiefs trade, like, multiple first-round picks to get all the way to, like, 10 or 12 to take him. That I would throw my TV out the window if that happened.
And we're seeing, you know, we look at college tape when we're trying to project to the NFL, and we always see things on college tape that we're definitely not going to see in the NFL. I think of Tyler Boyd a lot when I think of that concept, because the way Pitt used Tyler Boyd in college, I knew watching him that was just not the way. Like, he's never going to be that type of player in the pros. He's been a fine player, but the value for where he was picked, I think day two, that makes sense, because now he's, you know, he's like a third receiver on a good team, right? With Bowers, you see a lot of those. You know, Georgia was trying to get him involved, and so you see the tight end around, and just every time an NFL team runs that, you cringe because it doesn't work. It's a terrible play. I've seen my Cleveland Browns run that before. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are we running the tight end? I've seen Dallas do it too. So people love to watch the film and watch the tape, but I don't think that they always think about, you know, he's got to block. He's got to block if he's going to be a high pick. He's got to be like, not just he has to block, he has to be a good blocker, or he's going to be kind of like this role player that they're trying to find touches for. And again, I think he's a really good player. He's still my top tight end, but the value for me is probably like a first, late first, early second, versus where people are trying to put him as one of the top seven or eight players of this whole class. I'm not sure it's there. And I think Josh's point's valid, man. I mean, Seth and I play Dynasty League fantasy football. You know, Brock Bowers is somebody who got picked out of the college draft a couple of years ago, probably, right, Seth?
Yeah.
So, I mean, people know he's good, but when you're talking about NFL draft, I think Josh made a valid point, and I think, of course, leave it to fantasy Twitter, who I like them. I mean, I have a lot of friends in the fantasy world, but you know, they just evaluate these guys differently than a guy like Josh, who's kind of got his feet in both, on both sides of the border there. He's got, you know, 1 foot in fantasy, 1 foot in draft. That's kind of where he got his start. So, you have any other hot takes for us, Seth?
Yeah. Good. Real quick, this one just came out today. And I want to get your take because you guys had mentioned Patrick Paul. Houston offensive tackle Patrick Paul on a podcast today said a lot of teams have way different draft boards than the public mock drafts. Expect to see me late Thursday. So you were talking about it earlier. Is that a guy that goes ahead of somebody like Tyler Guyton to you? So, I mean, obviously you think so, but like, or you think he's better than Tyler Guyton, but is that a guy that ends up in Baltimore, you know, at 30 and then is an all-pro like in 2 years?
So I tweeted, I don't think he's got all pro potential or anything like that. But I actually tweeted this out the other day and some people killed me for it and then some people loved it. But like, I see the idea behind Guyton or Mims or one of them, right? Because the potential's through the roof. But I also see a guy in Patrick Paul, or you know, who's played a ton of snaps at left tackle, and I think I can fix what's wrong with him a whole lot easier and play him much earlier. Right? Like, to me, he's a guy you're gonna be able to put on the field and not hate the fact that he's on the field. Especially if you can clean up some of the things he does with his base and all. So when you watch him, you would not have thought that he was going to test anywhere near as well as he did, right? So I don't know that he's got all pro potential or pro bowl potential or anything like that, but I do think he's a starter in the league, especially if he lands in the right situation. And the right situation for him could be, like you're mentioning, Baltimore, Kansas City, one of those teams, second round. I'd like him more like a second rounder. You know, but a guy I think can play much earlier than some of the other guys that are being mentioned above him. And I trust him to play left tackle, right? Because he's done it. We've seen him do it now for a long time.
Where did Callahan's son get the coaching job? Is that Washington? Is that the Commanders?
That would make sense.
I forget where. We'll have to fact check this. But, I mean, Bill Callahan went with him. And we saw what Bill Callahan did with a lot of kind of project type of players in Cleveland. That would probably be a good fit if Patrick Paul can get in with like a Bill Callahan.
Titans.
Okay, Titans. My bad.
Yeah. I'm like, if you're talking about a guy who you want to play earlier, which is Baltimore, Kansas City, a place where they need to be able to find these guys who can provide value, and the value isn't that they're, you know, the most awesome, greatest left tackle anybody's ever seen. The value is I don't have to pay him a whole lot, right? And I can use my money to overpay Chris Jones or keep Travis Kelce happy or someone along those lines. And I can trust, right, that this guy can play some tackle for me for a while. So I think he's going to go higher than people think. The O-line community doesn't hate him. I don't think his flaws are nearly as bad as people think. And again, he's done what you're asking him to go do. It's not like this is a right tackle who's also a horrible athlete or he's small. He has everything you would expect. I mean, you're talking about 36-inch arms, right? He's only 23 years old, a 9.67 RAS, and I think he's got, like, what, 1,500, 1,800 snaps, something like that, at left tackle. Like, this screams a guy you can take in round two and trust to play some offensive line for you pretty quickly.
You make a good point, too. He is going to be 24 as a rookie, but he's, like, a younger 24, so he won't turn 24 until November. So you got a little bit more leeway with that pick, but you talked about how difficult it is switching from right to left, but NFL teams still like to do it. Could you see him making that switch to right tackle?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely going to be more comfortable on the left side, but I think you're going to have to rebuild a lot with him in terms of base, his hands, the you know, the level he plays at. You talked a little bit about alt, how he's taller. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where he's punching from is different. So that's where the short arms might come in, where, you know, Paul still plays a little bit high, but I think he's like 6'7". He's only just a hair under Alt. So he can definitely play both sides. You're going to have to rebuild a lot with him anyways. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's all pretty easily rebuilt. So, and he played a lot of football. So I would trust him to play either side.
Yeah. Great stuff, man. We always love talking to you. Like I said, this is one of the most popular shows that we do every year. And we're honored we're the only people you'll talk to. So, I mean, that's a bonus, man. And it's great to hear that you're doing well. Tell us where we can find you on X. Yeah, because I know you had a couple different accounts going, but it's actually a good story. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to keep on getting back. And I mean, every time I start to get a little popular again, somebody will I end up in some type of weird argument about something. First, it was the bicycle guy, you know, that killed my initial one, and it just keeps going. So I told an inside joke, and then I think I was poking fun at Bengals fans, so they went and spam reported an inside joke to make it seem real. So I lost my account again, but I just got it back, so I'm back now. Yeah, I do want to give one hot take here before we close
this
thing
out
here. All right, my hot take is that overall, the draft community, they're not covering things as fierce as they used to, and it's because they don't want to lose access to things, right? Because now agents and their social media involved and all that. If I can give you one hot take today that I can guarantee will be 100% true if we talk again 5 years from now, and that's that there isn't six franchise quarterbacks in this draft, and there aren't 10 starting left tackles, and there aren't 25 starting edges, and there aren't 30 starting cornerbacks. Like, we have got to start covering these guys again.
Are there 13 top 50 receivers?
Well, in today's NFL, who knows, right? But it's the way this draft has been covered. This is the first one to me that's been, like, eye-opening of you can hardly find bad, you know, bad talk or bad coverage about any. I mean, you go to the 12th offensive tackle, and if you read his write-up, it would have you convinced this guy's going to be in the Pro Bowl in, like, year two, and you're like, you mean to tell me OT 12 in round three is a day one starter? That's not likely, right? And then we all of a sudden, as a community, we're starting to ignore, like, you know, the historical nature of some of this stuff. Like the kid from Texas, he ran the fast 40. He's supposed to run fast when you weigh 150 pounds, right? Like, you know, if he ran 4.6 at 150 pounds, he's not making the CFL. Do you see what I'm saying? So, like, mm-hmm. We're just not covering things the way we used to, and the information is just so vast, and there's so much to get out there nowadays, but it's not being covered the way it was, man. You know, I haven't seen many people say, like, hey, this guy's a fifth-round grade. Like, you know, I mean, when you read this stuff, you would think the 15th offensive tackle is going to start for you day one, and you're going to get him in round five, and that's just not reality, right? So that's my hot take, and again, that one will still be good in 6 to 10 years from now. When we look back, I guarantee you there aren't six franchise quarterbacks in this class.
I think you're so right, Seth. You and I talk about this so much with just the comps, and actually, if you, I think the comps are good. Like when you just talk about when you're on Twitter or X, and you're just talking about, oh, I like this stylistic comp, and you're comping somebody to. You know, you're comping Rome Odunze to Larry Fitzgerald. That comp really doesn't work out on many levels. So if you do use a tool like Mock Draftable or rest in peace, the StatRef Combine Finder, which I thought was a much better tool even than Mock Draftable. But if you look at the comps, they're sobering. You'll get a list of seven or eight players, and one of them will be a player that was really good. And yep. And the rest of them will be guys that were maybe drafted second round, third round, and didn't pan out at all. And then some that were undrafted or fifth, sixth round. So I know Seth is really right. I mean, you're big with the high ceiling, or you're big with the ceiling and floor comps, which I think is a better exercise.
Right. Because, I mean, you got to give a range of outcomes. And the reality is, and like Sully said, like Rome Odunze, if you're going to give him a Larry Fitzgerald comp, then you're basically saying, like, hey, this guy's going to put on the gold jacket in 12 years. Like, like,
right.
And so it's like, hey, no pressure when you come out and you just average 850 yards a season and five touchdowns, right? It's like I just don't understand why he wasn't averaging 104 catches and 1,400 yards a season. Like, what happened to him? It's like, and to Sully's point, it's like, well, because we can't say anything negative about him. You know, he ran the three cone 17 times.
Well, that's also because his relatives have like 16 bot accounts that are going to tweet at you every time you say something that's not 100% flattering.
Well, it's just the craziest thing to me was like people were like, can you believe how long, like how hard he worked at the combine he stayed after to run the three cone because he wanted to get a certain time. And then it came out that he never hit that time.
Right.
So it's like.
Then didn't do it as pro day.
Right. It was. Yeah. So I'm like, so wait. We're excited that a guy couldn't achieve his one goal he set out for in the whole process. Like, he kept all these poor volunteer workers late at the combine and then didn't even and I like Rome. Like, I think he's going to be a good player, but
yeah, same.
It's just like one of those things. It's like, why don't we ever, and I think you're exactly right, Sully. It's like, why don't we ever talk about the fact that like Caleb Williams is not the next Patrick Mahomes, and that it's okay to be like, you know, his range of outcomes might be, you know, X to Z, instead of just being like, well, you know, the Bears found their Patrick Mahomes. It's like, Patrick Mahomes is a once in a generation player. Like, we've never seen anything mm-hmm. like this before. But you're right. He's the next Patrick Mahomes. Like,
even just to add to that, like, DeSean Jackson, that's a once in a lifetime guy who can play, like, and have that kind of an impact on a game at that size. Every right. guy who runs fast from then on out who's skinny isn't DeSean Jackson. Like, that's worked one time. You know what I mean? Not, I mean, there's Devontae Smith, tiny too, but they're completely mm-hmm. different players, right? And you could argue, you know, I mean, he's basically, I mean, he's a, like probably the one of the best wide receiver twos, but he's a wide receiver too, like,
right?
You know, it's so that's the thing that's getting me this year. It's just every single time it's like, this guy's going to be the second coming of DeSean Jackson. It's like, yeah. What about anything about this profile says that? So I agree with you, Seth. I actually like the comps, like you're saying, more like, hey, if everything goes well, maybe he's DeSean Jackson, you know, but it's more likely that he's Mecole Hardman. You know what I mean? Than it is
or,
anything
or maybe
else.
Like, and we're talking about Worthy, maybe he's even like a healthy John Ross, but that still was not going to be a wide receiver one for you.
Right. And his low end range might be a JJ Nelson, right? Like,
which isn't terrible, but again, it's a fifth round pick, right?
Yeah. Or John, what was it? John Brown. Didn't he have like a couple thousand?
John Brown. Yeah. He was a third rounder. That's a good one.
And so, yeah, it's like you can't say anything negative about any of them, or else it's like you're a hater. And the other thing that, like, sends me all the time is when I read these things and there's, like, three hedges in between everything.
It's like, if everything goes right and he stays right. healthy and he gets on an NFL strength program and gains 20 pounds –
but he also fixes all of the things that have made him not worth a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we've got a guy that could be a first rounder. And it's like, no, there's a reason that, like, a guy I was talking on a podcast earlier today, a guy like Jonah Ellis out of Utah. I love the player. His high end comps like Alex Highsmith from Pitt, that's with the Steelers now. And I'm like, if you get an Alex Highsmith in the third round, just like Alex Highsmith was drafted in the third round, that's great. But his low end comp is a guy that is like Dennis Gardeck for the Cardinals, right? Like a hair on fire pass rusher that you can have out there 12 to 15 snaps a game. Like, right. and that's okay. Like, that's an okay outcome of ranges. Like, we don't have to be like, oh, this guy is the next, like I like Laiti Latu. I like the player. He's good. I keep seeing people compare him to TJ Watt.
No, I'm my
like,
God.
I'm like, what are we doing?
And Watt went late in the first round, too, because of things like measurables and things like that. And Latu had to retire at one point because of a neck injury. So I really like the player, too, but that's a good example because, you know, he's going to play his whole rookie year at 23. He's not super old, but, you know, your comps, you're going to, you might get like a, you know, mock draftable will give you a Kayvon Thibodeau. Which he had a great year last year, but he was also much younger coming out and he didn't have the neck injury. And then you might get like a Kamoko Touré in there, which is a guy who went, I think, in the fifth round and never really did much. So,
and that's, again, I'm not, it's, that's the most likely scenario, right? Like,
Thibodeau would be hitting the jackpot.
Exactly. It's more likely that he's not that, you know, and that's like
somewhere that's okay. in between, right?
Yes, man. Like, that's okay. Like, Leo Chenal, the Chiefs took 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and he's never going to make a Pro Bowl. He's never going to make the All-Pro team, but he plays a lot of football for us, and what he's asked to do in his role, he does pretty well. He's a solid football player, man. Like, his comps coming out were insane. People are like, he's going to line up on the edge on second and third down, and, you know, it's like his – best case scenario if he does that is maybe Ahmad Brooks, right? You know, like, mm-hmm. but that's okay. If I get Ahmad Brooks in round three, I'm feeling pretty good, man. I got like a guy I can do a lot with for 4 or 5 years. So that's all, man. I just the way things are being covered now, the comps, and then just I think a lot of it is driven by just the fear of, you know, being blocked out of information or,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of stuff. But man, we're just not covering things the way it used to be covered. It's when you're reading this stuff, it's the comps are just astronomical, some of these guys coming out. And then again, the rule of thumb's always been don't draft outliers early,
Yeah.
And, you know, now people, somebody runs fast. It's like, oh, this guy's got to go round one. It's like, what about this tells you historically this will ever work?
Right.
You do have to appreciate the imagination of Draft Twitter, which should be evident to us because they also are big fans of Marvel comic movies and Harry Potter. So, you know, but, you know, you get, it's good. It's fun. It's always fun to discuss this stuff. But I totally agree with you. And Seth and I are two people in the DraftNik community that do try to take a more sobering view of these things. And when I post my rankings, they're going to be, the grades are going to, people are going to say, yeah, this sucks. This is the worst rankings I've ever seen, because I am a little harder on these guys because I do look at the history of it. And I personally have 7 draft years going back to compare players from the last 7 drafts very directly on their measurables, their testing, the stats they had, the starts that they made, that kind of thing. So, anything else, guys? I really appreciate Sully coming on with us.
No, that's but yeah, we do appreciate you, Sully, and very happy to hear the health is better, man.
That's a huge
thing. You're a great follow on X, and we highly recommend like getting his takes in before it gets to Chiefs season.
Before he gets banned.
Yeah.
For his Chiefs takes.
Before he gets upset and half of Chiefs.
I will eventually.
We appreciate you coming on, Justin. Glad we got back together and we can get this hammered out, man. Thank you guys all for listening, and we'll be back later this week with the mock draft. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.